I'm going to try diligently to go back to Godsend. Hi, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Quasi Indefatigable Zenilim. Let's talk about gods. I've been talking about other things for a couple of podcasts now. I'm going to try to get back to it. Let's get back to Melisenda. Her, you know, I think kind of the plan that the Convocation has for Melisenda is that she is going to become a breeder, like her mom. She's quiet, you know, she's got good looks, but she doesn't do anything with it. You know, you've seen movies or circumstances where there's really a pretty girl who because she just lacks confidence or doesn't try very hard, that she's just kind of a wallflower type. And that's what Melisenda tends to be. She's got all this knowledge. She knows about the Convocation. The book she has that she acquired has taught her so much about how things really are and about how things really go and how the Convocation works. But also what God wants us to do, and she wants to kind of do what God wants to do. She's a little nervous. She doesn't want to make too many waves because she already knows that if you make waves, you set yourself up for great risk. A lot of life for everybody is just trying to reduce risk. And everybody does it, from the richest and most famous and powerful of us down to the poorest of everybody. We want to be in a situation where we can get rid of as much risk as we can so we can feel a little bit confident, so we can feel a little bit like we can just take care of ourselves and we won't have to worry so much about, you know, the things that we can't control, like, say, for instance, a hurricane. I really feel for those people. Or an earthquake. Let's talk about the big stuff. The hurricane was somewhat small. We tend to navel gaze about the hurricane that did damage in New Orleans. Very few people died there. Some people died, but not very many compared to how many people got moved out. Let's take the tsunami in the southeastern Asia, or the earthquake in Pakistan. These are huge disasters. Nobody could do anything about it. I mean, we feel really bad about the people from the hurricane, but a whole lot of them could have avoided the thing because it was coming. You could see it coming. You could say, gee, we should get out of the way of this. And a lot of people either chose not to, or there's a lot going on that says that a lot of people were incapable of getting out of the way. You know, and I don't know if I believe all of it or not. That's okay. I'm sure there's some people that couldn't get away. But from an earthquake, there's no warning whatsoever. It just happened. Everything is destroyed. The kids were in school. They were all destroyed. They were all smashed by the ceiling falling in on them of these schools. There was no way to predict. There was no way to do it. It's much bigger, in my mind, tragedy than, say, the hurricane, for instance. But, you know, we all try to mitigate these risks that can come up, you know. We try to build buildings that can handle a certain kind of earthquake so that it doesn't kill us. We try to build, we try to fashion our lives. We try to put protections around us to keep us from being destroyed. Bad things happen. This is actually the basis of the insurance industry. That's how they make all their money. Is by, almost by scaring us, by saying bad things can happen, and we're here to help you. It's not a bad idea to have some insurance, because you know what? Most of us live hand to mouth. We don't have a lot of resources back in the background to save our butts when something really bad happens. When we have a downturn. Me personally, you know, a lot of people get like employment insurance, and they tack it on to almost every debt they have. They'll pay a little bit extra so that if for some reason they're unemployed or they lose their job, that insurance will pay for it for a certain amount of time, maybe up to a year. I don't know. I've never been worried about that because I've always just been able to go out and get another job. You know, I've always heard of these people who say, I've been out of work for 2 years, I can't find a job. And I don't believe that for a bit. I don't believe that. I think it's an absolute flipping cop-out. Sometimes I've had to take a real hit in my economy. I've gone from $35,000 a year down to $18,000 a year. But by golly, I can find a job. I think these people do this because they say, well, this is what I do. I'm going to look for jobs and this kind of thing. And they don't look around. They don't look around at the possibility and say, you know, I could do that. I could do that. There's jobs and jobs and jobs galore. I've never had a problem finding a job. I think there's only two kinds of people who stay unemployed for long periods of time. Number one, people who can't work in the first place, who really have no skills or have no desire to gain skills, and they just, you know, they just say, well, I'm going to be unemployed. Somebody's going to pay me to sit here and do nothing for a long time. You know, and when there's a bad downturn, we jump it up a little bit more. It goes from 6 weeks to 13 weeks to 26 weeks to 4 or 5 years. I don't think it's gone that far yet. I wouldn't know. I was on unemployment once, and it was mostly just because I was trying to get back at the system. You know, I had been, I had had my contract not renewed when I worked for a school. I'm kind of glad. I really didn't enjoy the school. I didn't enjoy the school environment. I was a critic of schools before I taught, and I'm still a critic of schools after I taught. And maybe it's for different reasons now. Or at least I found a whole bunch of new reasons to be critical of public education. Anyway, so, just, what about risk? We were talking about risk, trying to get rid of risk. My philosophy has always been, try to live well below your means so that you can save up a good portion of your income. So you can put it away somewhere. Even if it's no place more exotic than a regular passbook savings account. Because I'm not worried about, particularly about the interest rate that I'm earning off of it at this point in my life. I'm worried about just having it someplace safe so it doesn't disappear. A lot of people, you know, buy gold and bury it in their yards. That's not a bad idea. Gold goes up and down in value, but it's not crazy. By and large, you know, It's gonna be that way with anything that you put aside and say. I'm not a big guy who's big into the money economy. I've got to have it because there's a lot of things just flat can't get without having money. It's just a common form of exchange. Barter is kind of it's almost a silly thing to even talk about. You know, people go, oh, you don't have to do that. You can just barter. And you go, honestly, there's only a few people you can really barter with anymore. Because it's really hard to find other people who have what you want and that you have what they want. You end up with these 8 and 10 way barters trying to get everybody to do this, and at some point it falls apart. Greed enters in, something like that. It's much easier to convert all this stuff over to money because then it's a little more direct. Okay, I sell this thing I have, I get money for it, I use that money to buy something that then works. I'm not big into the whole thing of using money as an investment. I figure that's why we give God, that's why God gave us talent. That's why God made us individuals. That's why God, now I'm going to get philosophical, but it's not. I think he made it so that we could have use with the skills that we have, that we'll be able to provide for ourselves that way. Money just happens to get involved. It's made things much more convenient. I like money. I don't like barter because barter takes tons and tons of work. Every once in a while it turns out good. I don't mind bartering when there's a good opportunity, when we both have something we can mutually enjoy, but money makes it really nice. I don't like investing a lot into that. I don't like my life having to depend on other people. You know? Investments. Investments are scary because you take a turn for the worse and all of a sudden, boom! You can't live! And you haven't really been working on your skills, have you? Because you've been sitting back in your smoking jacket. You know, enjoying the fruits of your earlier labors that all of a sudden you can't do anymore. So you've got to keep plowing away. You don't necessarily have to do it for money anymore. You can do it because you just want to. I want to make this kind of thing happen. Why? Because I just want to. I've always wanted to. Anyway. My business has always been living outside of town, far enough away so that I could do what I wanted without other people pitching a fit over it. I'd like to have a large piece of property just for the simple reason that with a large piece of property, I control that buffer zone. There's not somebody who goes, oh, I'm sorry, that structure is within 800 feet of my property, and I don't like it, so I'm not going to allow you to do it. Other people tend to control your life. I mean, I can be nice, and I try to be nice, you know. I want my neighbors to have what they want so that when the time comes when I do something that I want to do, they'll say, you know what, Jay let me do this, Jay didn't give me a hassle about this or that, and now I'm gonna let him do it. That's kind of what I'm up to. But anyway. I always wanted to have shelter, a house, a home that was that made sense. I studied a lot about solar, a lot about energy, a lot about heat, cooling, and you know, it's not really that difficult to construct a house that takes advantage of just nature to heat and cool your house for you. At least to the biggest degree. That way you can save a lot of money. Most of us spend tons and tons of money on just the little needs of living. Electricity, water, gas, phone, all these things. And to a degree, we can mitigate a lot of these things. We can just be done with them. We don't need half as much electricity as we tend to use if we're just intelligent. There's a lot of things we don't need. I think, you know, I probably got an unfair view of things, honestly. I think we watch videos too much. I think my family watches videos. I think I watch videos too much. And every time I try to say that, I just take grief for it. How dare you? How hypocritical? Don't do that. Don't say that. It's like, you know, I'm trying to keep my wife happy. She enjoys movies. She enjoys books. So we have a lot of books, a lot of movies, because you know what? My biggest thing is to keep her happy. Now, I've got fantastic ways to take care of all these problems. You know? A good laptop computer is a DVD player. And that's it. We could just do it. I've got my DVD player. Everything's great. You know? We have the technology. We have the technology to do it really inexpensively and to do it well and to be happy with it. Make this stuff happen. I'm not sure the amount of work that needs to be done would go down, but it would certainly make it so that if there was an economic downturn, if something bad happened, we would be able to survive it. One of the great stories of my past, my great-grandfather and my grandparents were people who were old enough to live through the Depression. My maternal grandparents didn't even notice there was a Depression. There was just no change in their life. They still did what they did. They did what they had always done. My grandfather, who I never met, honestly, or at least never met enough to even know anything about him, besides what my mom told me, was a dairyman, among other things. He used to drive school buses. He used to run a school bus yard. all these things. You know, there was just the little things that you did to make money to survive. Things that needed to be done, or things that government was contracting to have somebody do them, and you would win the contract and you would do it. You did all these things. Now, when you're in the dairy business, you know, it says it really doesn't matter. You have a well that pumps the water, that brings up the stuff. As long as you can handle what few spare parts are needed on occasion to take care of the needs of this pump, you've got water. You've got the water for your cattle. Grass continues to grow by and large. I mean, you may have a really great year where there's grass everywhere, or you might have a really lean year where the grass isn't very good. But you've still got the grass. As long as you don't get used to the fact that you have to have a very, very good year to survive, you're going to do fine. And that's kind of what happened with my grandparents and my great-grandparents. They had all this stuff kind of set up. They were farmer-ranchers sort of people. I'm not really that way. I'd kind of like to get a little closer to that myself, just to mitigate risk. Now, I've never been able to convince, maybe because I haven't put it in terms that really speak to my wife. Maybe I should talk about risk and how this reduces risk and how it can save us. But she hates, she really lives in fear of the uncertain. She finds our culture and the way it works at least certain. I don't think it's certain at all. I think we're just lucky that it still works the way it does. You know, that there's a whole bunch of people that will willingly almost sell their souls to make other people rich so that we can have products and stuff like that. That we can go to the grocery store every single day if we want to and buy an almost unlimited amount of food and supplies to keep up our lifestyle. And I'm saying, you know what, that's risky. That's risky. If something were to happen to, you know, trucking through my town, you know, we'd all be in dire straits. There'd be people starving within days because they have no capability of providing these stuff for themselves. It's like everybody talks about when they talk about, you know, when they used to ask kids, where does milk come from? They say, the grocery store. And you go, they don't understand a bit. So, you know, you take them on field trips and you'd see, and you take them to a dairy and see this incredible milk factory that we have now. You know, this, and I don't think it really teaches anybody anything. It actually teaches kids that they need to be more a slave to this kind of manufacturing world that we live in, because if we don't do that, we'll never survive. Because you say, I can't milk a cow, why not? Well, look, you have to have that piece of equipment, that piece of equipment, that piece of equipment. You have to have all this sterile stuff. And you go, no, you don't. I says, you need to have a cow, you need to have a few skills that you can learn in not very long, and you'll be able to milk a cow. Now, it takes a lot of effort, it takes time, and frankly, you know, you have to do it twice a day, every single day. There's no vacations from it, unless you find somebody else to do it for you. And that's kind of the way it ends up being. My children aren't as responsible as I wish they were. And part of the reason is because I don't push them. The other part of the reason is because we have a society that tells you that everything will be provided for you if you have enough money. If you can pay for all of it. You don't have to know how to do anything as long as you have money. And that to a degree, if you have a job doing something, you're going to have money, and maybe you'll have enough to get at least some of the things that you need, some of the things that you want. And that's kind of how our system works. We're not really interested in people who can do things. We're more interested in just keeping the whole thing going. We really are more concerned with people being consumers rather than producers, as they say. It's important that corporations produce everything. That makes everybody beholden to the corporation. The corporation would be nothing. They wouldn't be able to exact what they exact from society if they didn't feel, if it wasn't felt that they were absolutely needed. There's evil things that have to do with corporations along with everything else. And if we didn't need them, we probably wouldn't have them. You know, we'd have more partnerships. We'd have people that were working and doing all this stuff. Anyway, my picture has always been placed out of town, at least out of town far enough that nobody cared. And be able to get as much as I could without having a great output of money. I grew up in a house where there was a windmill, and we would pump our water, and we would get the water that we needed. One of our biggest problems is that we've almost created a culture that can't behave like that anymore. You know, farmers a generation ago, they were dirty, grimy, smelly. You know, they get up, they worked all day. They came home, they splashed some water on their face and their hands just so they wouldn't get diseases, and they wouldn't smell too bad. And then they would eat dinner and go to bed. And that was their lives. Their lives were consumed by just kind of being kind of stinky. Because they had a rather stinky job. It was sweaty. It was physical labor. Well, nowadays, our biggest thing is to be clean. You know, we're extremely clean compared to any other culture. In fact, one might say we're ultra clean. We're probably too clean. I remember when that whole thing came out about, you know, the belly button care kit. There was this little thing where people thought that there would be great benefit come from doing all this stuff for your belly button. You would actually have special little tools and little pads and special kinds of soaps that were made to clean out your belly button. And to make it so it was nice and fresh and clean, and everybody, and it was great. It was supposed to provide some kind of health that, you know, that for some reason a lot of diseases came from the fact that we just didn't clean out our belly buttons enough. And it was such a craze. Everybody who was anybody was doing it. Kind of like the piercing that has happened since then. Just silliness. And, you know, we've become ultra clean. And it requires a lot of resources. It requires a lot of water, soap, lots of everything to make this happen. And, you know, honestly, I think it has more to do with marketing than anything else. We've spent so many years with so many television shows, you know, talking about body odor. We don't even talk about it anymore because it's so locked into our culture, you know. You've got BO, you've got dandruff, so we go out and we buy expensive shampoos to get done with this. Well, we found out that all you had to do was shampoo more and you wouldn't have that stuff anymore. And boom! All of a sudden the shampoo industry went ballistic. Everybody could make tons of money off of shampoo. Why? Because we used so much of it. Because we were so locked into being so clean all the flipping time. Oh. And all that stuff is brought about because other people have products to sell to us, and honestly, we need to consume, and we need to consume a lot. Consume, 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 consume. And that's almost what we're trained to do from birth. Our television, school, everything else is trained to turn us into consumers that just mindlessly go about just... Why do you drink Starbucks coffee? A lot of people drink Starbucks coffee. Why? Because it's cool. It tastes good. No, you know, nobody's doubting this. It's a good product. I wouldn't know because I don't drink coffee. It's sprung up everywhere. All the things are kind of like Starbucks coffee. It's sprung up everywhere. Oh, we're going to have to come back. This is quasi-indivisible dentalist. I think I might go on with this topic a little bit more. Maybe not. And I'm Jay Nemiro. And if you want to see us on the internet, go to... Quix, QUIX.US. Have a great day, and don't just be a mindless consuming cow.